Olivia. Yeah. Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastuma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. As Sri Soneji said, the topic this evening is karma, action. And when we talk, you're able to hear? You can't hear?
Okay, now check. You said just keep the volume.
Okay. And when we topic is karma, means action. When there is action, there is also karma phala, result of the action. This is the most important thing in our life. Action and the result of the action. The starting of the Bhagavad Gita was on this issue of performing action, and the reason was that what is the result of the action? Whereas Swamiji said that what are the different dimensions of the result was not clear to Arjuna. As you know, Bhagavad Gita is the dialogue between Lord Krishna and Arjuna. And in the beginning of the battle itself, Arjuna declared that I do not see any purpose in fighting this battle. I guess everyone here is familiar with the background of the Bhagavad Gita, so I need not have to elaborate on that. Okay. It's function. Oh. Wow.
Can you hear?
Now. But I could hear before, earlier also. How come? All right. I presume that all of you are familiar with the background of the Bhagavad Gita. So I need not elaborate upon that. But the necessity of the teaching of Bhagavad Gita arose is because right in the beginning, Arjuna declared that I do not see any purpose in fighting this battle. Lord Krishna will remind him that if you win the battle, if you fight the battle, you will get victory. If you get victory, you will get kingdom. If you get kingdom, get all the associated happiness, pleasures, means of happiness. Arjuna says, I'm not interested. So here is action. In this particular instance, action is fighting the battle. In our case, it could be some other action. In this instance, the reward of the action is a great reward of victory, kingdom, power, and means of happiness. And still Arjuna declared that I am not interested in those things. What is there in kingdom? Kinno rajyena govinda. O Lord, what is there in kingdom? What is there in pleasure? What is there even in long life? Meaning that the outcome that Arjuna saw as coming from performing this action of battle did not motivate him, because he realized that the price that you have to pay for getting that outcome of victory and kingdom was a huge price in terms of the death of the near and dear ones. And therefore, the outcome did not motivate him. When the outcome does not motivate us, what's the purpose of performing the action? Because when you perform the action, then there is an outcome. There is a result. And usually, it is a result which enthuses us, which motivates us to perform an action. If I am going to get good salary, promotion, some recognition, even in small things that we do, even in our day-to-day life, always an expectation of some recognition. Even if you cook food, you invited guests at home, even though we do not express it overtly, there is some expectation in the mind that people would appreciate it. Some, appreciation would be there. So usually the result of the action that we understand is in this material terms that the action will bring to us a reward in the form of some material gain, which may be wealth or it may be recognition, power, fame, something or the other, which we understand. And usually people perform actions as motivated by this outcome. And Arjuna also came to the battlefield with this understanding. I'll fight the battle, defeat the enemies, get the kingdom. But all of a sudden he lost interest in that. Meaning that now the outcome that he sees does not interest him anymore. And when the outcome does not interest me, if the result does not interest me, then I lose all the interest or motivation in performing action. It's natural. Because an action is performed for the sake of reward that action brings. And if the reward is not interesting, or reward is painful sometimes, then we want to avoid those actions. Even though it may be the right action, even if right action also does not bring a desirable reward, then I have a tendency to avoid that action, even though it may be my duty. In this case, to fight this battle was Arjuna's duty, because Arjuna belonged to the Kshatriya class, whose duty was to protect dharma, protect righteousness, protect society. He knew that this is my duty. But the reward was most unpleasant, very painful, in terms of the death of the near and dear ones. And therefore, that kingdom and power which the reward will bring also had no instant motivation for Arjuna. So this is how the Bhagavad Gita begins. The problem is motivation, a big problem in management, motivation. Usually, reward that comes from the action is the motivation for us. And if the reward is not interesting, then we lose the motivation. Either we don't perform the action, or even if we perform the action, not with great interest, we just get over with it. And so it is the purpose of Bhagavad Gita to teach us that there is a different kind of reward also. Not only in action brings about a worldly reward, a material reward, which we can measure, which we can quantify, but it can also bring about a subtle or unquantifiable reward, which is even more important than this quantifiable material reward. And that should become the reason for performing an action. So what should become the reason for performing action? Usually the reason is the material reward. In Sanskrit, it is artha and kama. Artha means the wealth, fame, power, and kama means the pleasure, the gratification that comes as a result. Usually, artha and kama are the reward and motivation for people to perform actions. And the whole world does it for that. I mean, after we go to work for artha, it will bring me income, it will bring me recognition, it will bring me a measure of quantifiable material gain. But here Arjuna lost interest in that. He realized that even if he gets all of that, somehow he could sense that even all those gains also, at one point Arjuna says to Lord Krishna, that not only kingdom of earth, but even if I get the kingdom of heaven, even then also, I do not see how the grief that I am feeling in my heart, that it can be removed. Somehow Arjuna could see that no worldly gain can give him what he is seeking in life. That what he is seeking in life is freedom from grief, freedom from unhappiness, freedom from sorrow, and which is what every human being is seeking. Sukha prapte dukkha nivritti. Attainment of happiness and removal of sorrow is basically what we are seeking through every action. The reason why we have a lot of fascination for wealth and power and fame is because it is assumed that they bring us happiness and they remove sorrow. That is the reason why they become important to us. Understand that anything in the life becomes important to me not for its own sake, but for the sake of my happiness. If something can bring me happiness or remove the sorrow, then alone it is important to me. And things become important because I think that that will bring me happiness or remove the sorrow. Dvadaranyaka Upanishad says, Atmanastu kamaya sarvam priyam bhavati. Whatever is dear to me is dear because of the pleased self. If you really look at what we are seeking in our life, every moment, then we will realize that we are seeking to be a pleased self, a happy self. That's all we are seeking. What is most valuable to us is my own self. Which self? Pleased self. Happy self is the most valuable thing in my life. And other things become valuable because I believe that they can bring about the pleased self. Moment I realize that what I thought will make me happy in fact does not make me happy or makes me unhappy, I lose all the attachment, attraction for that. I just leave it. So if you look at the activities in our life, we realize that worldly things become important to us, not for their sake, but because we look upon them as a means of pleased self, means of happiness, a means of removal of sorrow. That is our goal. Somehow Arjuna recognized this. He had not recognized it all these years, I guess, but now he recognized in the midst of battlefield that even if I gain all of these, it is possible, I don't think that it can remove the sorrow. Doesn't look like it can bring about a pleased self, then what is the use of all this? He did not say it in so many words, it may not have been so clear to him. But if we look at ourselves, what is the one thing that we are seeking through every endeavor and every minute or every moment is pleased self, attainment of happiness and removal of sorrow. So this is one thing we should understand, that we are seeking something in life and what we are seeking is this: to be the pleased self, to be the happy self. That's what we are seeking. And now the karma, the motivation for action now should come from this understanding. That if I realize that action can indeed bring me happiness, then action becomes also important to me, because happiness is important to me. And what is happiness? Happiness is when I am pleased with myself. Understand that. It's also important to understand, when do I feel happy? I feel happy when I am pleased with myself. When I am happy with myself. When I am comfortable with myself. When I accept myself. When I respect myself. That is when I am happy. When I do not accept myself, when I do not respect myself, I am not happy with myself. I am not happy. So you should also understand, when do I become happy? Although I have concluded that when I get something enjoyable or desirable, whenever my desire is fulfilled, or whenever I get something desirable, that's when I become happy. And therefore, I have taken for granted that this something else which I call desirable, that's what makes me happy. This is my conclusion. But on the other hand, it is not because something desirable is gained. When that desirable thing is gained, I find myself happy with myself. You follow? What we call desirable is merely an occasion, an instrument to create in me a pleased self. Understand this. If what I call desirable right now does not create the pleased self when I get it, and sometimes it happens that by the time something comes, I lost interest in that. Sometimes I keep on nagging my mother, give me this, and he doesn't give me, doesn't find it, okay, take it. Then I'm not interested now. If that thing was going to give me happiness, then it should give me happiness any time. Why does it not give me happiness when I'm not interested in that? See, if the sugar, sweetness is the nature of sugar, whether I'm interested or not, sugar will give me sweetness, is it not so? Similarly, if this thing has happiness in it, it should give me, whether I, whatever be my mood, is it not so? It's not so. So happiness comes when I am a pleased self. In that, any outside, any kind of an achievement, any kind of a worldly object or situation only becomes instrumental. A triggering point in bringing the pleased self. If it fails to trigger that, I'm not happy, I'm not interested in that. So this basic reality about ourselves, if you understand, that what we are seeking is seeking to be happy, and happiness comes when I am pleased with myself. When I am pleased with you, then also, if that brings about being pleased with myself, then only I am happy. So what is happiness? When I am pleased with myself. Therefore, what is the result that we should be seeking from an action, from anything, is that I should be pleased with myself. You follow? So any action that brings about the reward in the form of my being pleased with myself, that would be a desirable action for me, because the reward, the result I'm really seeking is to be pleased with myself. Any action that can bring about that will be a desirable action. Is it not so? So Lord Krishna says that any action can bring about that reward, provided an action is performed with right attitude. So Bhagavad Gita teaches that the reward in terms of happiness, which is nothing but being pleased with myself, is the result of the right attitude rather than the result of some external factor. Not even wealth, not even power, not even fame, not even anything can necessarily make me happy. What is the means of being happy in our life? As Bhagavad Gita teaches, is the right attitude is what makes me pleased with myself. And it is a wrong attitude, a wrong value, which makes me unhappy with myself. The right values and attitudes make me happy with myself, and the wrong values and attitudes make me unhappy with myself. You understand this? Nothing out there can either make me happy or unhappy. Nothing there can necessarily make me happy or necessarily make me unhappy also. But Swami, suppose you fail in your effort, will you not be unhappy? Suppose you are insulted, would you not be unhappy? So suppose you lost something that is dear to you, would not be unhappy? No rule at all. That something happens or does not happen is not a rule that makes me happy or unhappy. What is my value or what is my attitude? That is what determines whether I'm happy or unhappy. This is a very great secret that Bhagavad Gita teaches us. So Karma Yoga, our Pujya Swamiji always say, it is the yoga of attitude. It is not a yoga of karma. It is yoga of attitude. Karma or action becomes the occasion for me to bring out that attitude. If you can have that attitude without karma, then you don't need to perform karma. But I will not say it right now. That's what we want. That's when you become a renunciate. But right now what we're talking about is that karma, when I have to do something, when I have to perform an action, I must necessarily exert myself. You know, some strain I should take when I have to perform an action. Some time I have to invest. Something you have to invest in performing an action. Some energy, some time, something. And then when I invest something, my mind always asks, what for? What is in it for me? Usual question in the mind is, what is in it for me? Why should I invest my time? Why should I invest my energy? Why should I invest anything that I have? Because I will invest it, sacrifice it, give up something. Then what am I going to get out of that? So whenever we are about to perform any action, these questions arise in our mind. What is in it for me? There is a time for me to bring up the right attitude. Then what is in it for you? That this action will enable you to retain the right attitude. This action gives you an opportunity to display the right value and right attitude. That what is important to you. What is important is right value and right attitude. You'll be surprised, why is it so, Swami? Why do you say the right values and attitudes give me happiness and not all these, Rasgulla and movies and stuff like that, all this thing. Why do you say they don't give me happiness? Because whenever I act in keeping with the right values, we have been talking about these values, since last 2-3 days. But briefly, what is a value? You know very well that honesty is a value. Fairness is a value. Kindness is a value, right? Nobody has to teach me that. These values such as honesty, fairness, kindness, what is the basis of this value? What is that makes these values valuable? Because whenever I act in keeping with the value, I am acting in keeping with the basic law or harmony that exists in the universe. There is what we call a moral order in the universe. Not only there is a mechanical order which the scientists explain to us, but it is not simply mechanical order that runs the universe. It is also the moral order that runs the universe. And therefore, whenever I act in keeping with that moral order, it is called value, because then it becomes a valuable thing. And whenever I violate the moral order, it is a wrong value. Similarly also, what is the right attitude? So what is the right value? When I act in keeping with the moral order. So honesty is in keeping with moral order. Truthfulness is in keeping moral order. We see fairness even in the universe, moral order. In the universe, everything is truthful except human being. Everything acts according to its nature. Nobody has to have a facade. The dog is a dog, always, 24 hours a day. And a cat is a cat. Meaning you can predict how a dog will behave, how a cat will behave, how a donkey will behave, how anything will behave. You can. If you could not predict, then there will be no science, understand? Science is all based on the law of cause and effect. That you can predict the effect from cause, that when you boil the water, you are pretty sure that it will boil at 100 degrees centigrade at normal atmospheric pressure. And that's how we conduct our life. If water boiled at different temperatures every day, suppose water had its own free will, and today it boils 100 degrees and tomorrow at 50 degrees, so I'm setting my pressure cooker, four whistles. In India, there's a, so I've been making cooking rice, 3 whistles. But today water says I'll boil at 3 whistles, tomorrow 6 whistles. So then, there cannot be any order at all. But we are able to cook, we are able to function, do our daily activities, because everything functions in a consistent, predictable manner. because there is an order. So everything acts according to that order. And therefore, we should also act in keeping with that order, then only there can be harmony within ourselves. And when we violate the law, there is going to be a violation of disharmony in myself, which is our experience. That whenever we find ourselves having done something which in our opinion is wrong, suppose I, for some reason, I was compelled to tell a lie to somebody. Or out of anger, I hurt somebody, said something which hurt the feelings. Then I have a guilt feeling, isn't it? I regret. This guilt feeling or regretting what we did is only a human thing. It's all consciousness. This guilt shows an evolved consciousness. Cat has no guilt. Cat is a typical thing. No guilt. A cat in the morning takes a round of the garden, has a good breakfast of squirrels and things like that. It comes and sits in front of you as though nothing has happened, like a wise thing, you know. Because it has no guilt. When it makes a mouse its breakfast, no guilt. We think that it will be nice, then there is no guilt. Because guilt is a big cause for our suffering and they don't have that guilt. Would it not be nice? No. The guilt is the manifestation of an evolved consciousness. Although that makes us unhappy. Hurt also is like that. A dog doesn't get emotionally hurt. It can get physically hurt, all right, when hit it. But emotionally, it doesn't remember that yet, that day after 2 days, it'll come and bite me because you just told you did this to me. It doesn't have that stuff. This hurt and guilt is a very typical situation of the human being. So this morning, the question was, what is the special of human being? Evolved consciousness. We are evolved in our self-consciousness, and that is what creates in us this hurt and guilt. Would it not be nice if there is no hurt and guilt? You'll be happy? Is it not so? Hurt and guilt are all meant to help us evolve. So the fact that we have guilt shows that we know there is something wrong. Meaning that whenever we violate the order in terms of value, we are punished. Creates sense of guilt. And then of course, papa, sin is created, and that's another thing. So these values like honesty, like fairness, like non-violence, all based on the prevailing moral order. In Sanskrit called niyati. Niyati means the prevailing order. So Lord Krishna says, niyatam kuru karmatvam. We perform your action in keeping with that order. Second is attitude. Gita teaches us two things. Values and attitude also. What is an attitude? What's the basis of attitude? The basis of attitude is what I expect from you. All of us have expectations from others as to how we should be treated. I always want you to be kind to me. I want you to forgive me. Is it not so? I don't want you to punish me. Even when I make a mistake, I hope to be forgiven, not punished. I want you to be kind, not cruel. I want you to help me, not hurt me. So this also forms a basis of how we relate to each other. That I should not do unto you what I do not want you to do to me, and I should do unto you what I want you to do to me. So basically, I always want you to help me, not hurt me, to be kind to me, not cruel to me. And therefore, this becomes the basis of my relating to you, that I should be kind to you. I should be helpful to you and not hurtful to you, isn't it? values and attitudes. Now, does this have anything to do with our happiness? We find that whenever we abide by these values, such as whenever I am truthful, when I am honest, when I am fair, then I feel happy with myself. You will observe that. It's not easy to be honest. To be honest always requires me to give up the benefit that comes from dishonesty. The reason why I may tell a lie is not for no reason. I tell a lie when I see, when I gain something out of that, and when I tend to gain something, or tend to avoid some loss. I tell you lie, what's your age, Swamiji, what's your income, what is that? I mean, because I don't want to expose myself, and I don't want to. So we always have a facade. What I'm inside is one thing, what I appear to is a different thing. And I always want to appear before you such that you will accept me, you will like me, you will respect me, you will approve of me. So I hide within myself things which may not be acceptable to you. Meaning this kind of pretentiousness, all this stuff is built in. So then if I want to be honest, I cannot pretend to be what different from what I am. In that case, then it is possible I will be exposed. That my vulnerabilities, my limitations, my blemishes may be exposed to you. Then only I can be honest sometimes, or transparent or fair. Meaning that for following the value of honesty, one Mahatma said that, look, even these spouses are also not honest with you, let alone anybody else. Husband does not tell everything to his wife, and wife does not share everything with the husband. Because they know what the outcome will be. And so if I want to be fair and transparent and honest, then I have to be willing to even expose my vulnerabilities, my blemishes, my defects. And you may as well reject me. Whatever it is, I have to be willing to accept the outcome. An unpleasant outcome. Or make a sacrifice for following a value. So understand that following any value, non-violence, truthfulness, honesty, any value always requires me to let go of something which is dear to me, called attachment. What comes in the way of practicing value is our attachment, that this is important to me. For example, money is important to me. Wealth is important to me. Fame is important to me. Power is important to me. My image is important to me. And more often than not, in practicing value, I may be required to let go of these things that are important to me. That is where the conflict comes. If I don't have to let go of anything, I'm always honest. Always truthful, honest. But when something I have to let go, when honesty means losing some money, paying some more taxes, paying more duties, etc., etc., that is when then the battle begins in my mind. As many years ago, I was passing through customs in Mumbai, and then the customs officer asked me, Swamiji, you are carrying two big bags. You have something? I said, nothing. That is when the question came. What should I say? Should I tell him what all I am carrying with me? Then there is fat duty and penalty and stuff like that. A lot of money. And even Swami also requires money, unfortunately. So then a conflict arises. On one hand, am I telling the truth? which will cost me 100,000 rupees. Am I ready? I'm a Swami. If I say no, then let me go, because I still trust the Swamis. They respect. So I have the freedom to say, no, I don't have anything. I can walk out. But if I have to be honest, I must be willing to let go. Then once I say or something declared, he will open my bag and check every corner of it, you know. And then he'll make a list of every little shirt, everything, and put money to that. And then this is what you bring, and this is the beauty, this is the penalty. You know, that it hurts my heart when I see that money going away. So we cannot practice any value unless we are willing to let go of something that is otherwise important to me, to which I am attached. And all this worldly stuff is what I am attached to, because right now I look upon them as a means of happiness. And I am required to let go, let go. It's painful. Meaning that we cannot follow a value without undergoing some pain. That's the whole idea. Usually we want to avoid pain. So we take a shortcut. Sometimes what is painful is not convenient. Therefore, very often there is a tendency to do what is convenient, meaning to avoid pain. Thus, in every situation now we have a choice to do what is right and what is convenient. What is right is to follow the values, the duties, do things that are required to be done, which is in keeping with my position, with my dignity, with my role, with the place I have in the life, in the scheme of things. Each one of us has a place in the scheme of things, you know. You are a father, you are a mother, you are a sister, brother, daughter, son, teacher, disciple, boss, subordinate. Everybody has a status, a role to play, and a script for every role. Like in play, there is a script for every role. In life also, there is a script for every role. That father means you behave in a certain way. Teacher means you behave in a certain way. You can't do certain things. A father cannot do certain things. He has to be generous before his children, and then, that is what is expected. When we were in our schools, in the town that I was growing up, children have a lot of respect for the teachers, the school teachers also. One evening when we were all friends were going for a walk, one of my friends drew my attention to the sidewalk, and a group of people were sitting there and playing cards. And a friend of mine was very sharp. He drew my attention. Hey, do you see that person? Who is he, He's such and such. He was one of our teachers. I was shocked. My teacher, sitting on the sidewalk, playing cards. Meaning a teacher has a dignity, then therefore he cannot do certain things. Once as a child, I had gone with my father to, to vegetable market to purchase something. You bargain with them. And so I was just, my father may be doing something. I was watching around and I again saw some other person who I respected. You know what I found? That they bring those shopping bags. So when that vendor was busy weighing something, this fellow quietly picked up one eggplant and put it in his bag. Says, what? He can do this? Meaning that at every moment we have a dignity, and we have therefore to follow that dignity. We cannot do certain things. Even though it may be convenient to pick up that eggplant which you get free, you cannot do that. So almost in every situation, sometimes there arises from me an impulse to do something convenient, take a shortcut Avoid pain. Basically, what we want is to avoid pain. And I don't always mean physical pain, it means emotional pain. Pain coming from giving up something to which I'm attached. Attachment is a big thing. Attached to my money, attached to my income, to my this, my family. This is attachment. And more often than not, following values requires me to give up one or the other attachment. You'll find that. Similarly, right attitude, to be a kind person, to be a giving person, that's what I expect from others, that's what I do with others. So following these right values and attitude is what an action expects from me. Every moment I am required to give an appropriate response to the situation according to my position, according to my role. I am required to play a role. And in every role there is a script in terms of right values and attitudes. And following those values and attitudes almost invariably require me to put up with the pain that comes from giving up something or letting go of something for which I have attachment. Meaning that we are required to give up our attachments for living a life of values and attitudes. Some price we have to pay? Is this a worthwhile price? Lord Krishna says, yes. What is the cause of my sorrow? Gita says, these attachments. And attachment is always accompanied with aversion. See, when I'm attached to this one, what is attachment? I look upon that as a source of happiness and security. When I'm attached to something, means what? To me it is important because it is, I look upon that source of happiness and security. I feel happy and comfortable in presence of that, or when I experience that. That's why it's important to me. And unfortunately, it happens that someone else also may be interested, meaning that someone may as well become an obstacle to my fulfilling my attachment and the aversion for that. So every attachment almost is accompanied with aversion. Attachment of one is usually accompanied with aversion from another one. In Indian movies, formally, I have not seen for a long time, but there is a triangle in Indian movies. One woman and two men. One is a hero, other is a villain. The fight. Attachment for this woman, aversion for that man. So attachments and aversion, this is the way we relate to everything. Lord Krishna says, Tayurnavashamagachet, Tau yasya paripantinav. Here Arjuna, do not come under the sway of attachment and aversions, meaning that let those attachment and aversions not regulate you, not sway you, not determine what you do. Because, see, this girl, this young woman got recently married and then went to her in-laws. In India, see, then you go from my parents' house to the in-laws' house. It's all new and strange, and it takes a long time before you really establish some kind of a rapport with them. It's not easy. So naturally, this young woman misses her family. A sister misses her brother. So when the brother is visiting her, she's so happy. With her husband still, a bond is not developed. This takes a long time, if at all it develops. So both of them are sitting, for meal, and she is serving them. In India, there is a great value when you are, for example, you take rice or khichdi or roti, chapati, then you serve ghee also along with that. The poor ghee. So when this girl is serving, her husband is there, brother is there. Here she may put a little bit, but when it comes to that, my brother, I like him, I want to please him. And so, without even my effort, automatically I pour more, and that fellow watches. Attachment, aversion. Most of our actions are governed by this attachments and aversions. You want to please that which we like and displease, so we are partial to those which we are attached to and cruel to those which we have aversion for. Lord Krishna says both of these are a cause of a sorrow. Don't come in this way. And when we are not coming this way, when I follow the right values or attitudes, I cannot follow, cannot be controlled by attachment, because then I cannot follow the value. Meaning that in order for me to be honest, to be truthful, to be non-violent, to be kind, to be compassionate, I have to let go of the attachment and aversion. What does it do to me? It makes me free. What is bondage in our life? It's attachments and aversions. They are the weight, they are the burden on my heart, and that is they what make me unhappy, sad. All sadness is a result of this. Unfortunately, not understanding that, what we do is we keep on satisfying the attachment and aversion. When I perform an action, it is motivated by attachment, because I like that, that's why I do this. I dislike that, I don't do that. I like this, then I favor. I dislike, then I punish. That's my life. So these attachments, aversions keep on going in intensity, and they bind me, they make me unhappy. So when am I happy? When I am free, when my mind is free from attachment and aversion. So then what is there in life? If there is no attachment, no aversion, then what is there? There is happiness. That is what we call prasannata, cheerfulness, happiness. The attachment also seems to bring happiness when I am satisfied. Aversion also brings happiness when I punish somebody whom I do not like. But that is all binding happiness. That's just a show of happiness, binding happiness, which needs more and more and more. On the other hand, when I am free from attachment, even a moment I am free from attachment and aversion, that's called sattva. Attachment is raga, rajas, aversion is tamas, and freedom from that is sattva. Sattva means purity, tranquility. I enjoy tranquility of the mind, the inwardness of the mind. Mind comes face to face my own self, and self is happiness. That is the reason why I experience happiness when the mind becomes inward looking. These attachments and aversions always pull the mind away from me, make the mind outward looking, and they will deprive me of the happiness which is myself. Whereas, when I give up these attachments, even a moment, momentary mind becomes inward. I feel happy with myself that I did something good, something right. Even though giving up attachment is painful, but then in my mind, I feel proud of myself that I did something right. Even though I do put up with some pain in terms of giving up attachment and aversion, that pain creates in me a sense of self-worth, that I did something worthy. I feel happy, I have respect for myself, self-respect, self-esteem. So problem these days is self-esteem. Our answer to that is do what is right. Even if it is not convenient. And more often than not, what is right is not convenient. If we are committed to that, then I realize that I can do it. That is conducive to my inner strength, self-respect, self-esteem. I am happy with myself. I am pleased with myself. That's called happiness. What is it? A pleased self. So it is, karma is an occasion for me to display or practice the right values and attitudes which require me to overcome the pressure of attachment and aversion, conquer them. In fact, there is an inner victory. Every time I am able to overcome that pull of attachment and aversion, I feel victory, a step of victory. So inner victory is what my inner enemies, I gain victory over them. They are those who deprive me of the peace of mind. And Ashantasya Kutasya, Lord Krishna says, how can there be happiness when the mind is not at peace? I cannot be at peace with myself when I violate the law. I cannot be at peace with myself when there is hurt and there is guilt. How can I be at peace with myself? Swamiji, nobody has any guilt these days. People tell lies without anything at all. People do everything, feels nothing. They seem to be happy. You talk about all these values and fellows who follow values, they are then happy fellows. Some people believe that only dishonesty brings you prosperity. Maybe it may. Well, the dishonesty brings happiness and not is a different thing. Prosperity may, it may bring, that also I don't believe. But in case, suppose, what brings you prosperity is a punya karma. And what brings you pain is papa karma, that is our rule. But momentarily, even if I don't take into account, prosperity does not mean necessarily mean happiness. At the cost of my inner peace, when a conflict is created, guilt is created, I am not at peace with myself. Meaning that I have basically problem with myself in life. You know who I have problem with? Myself. I may blame others. If my spouse is like that, he is pushing my button. He is like this. I have all kinds of reasons for my unhappiness. But really, who is the cause of my unhappiness? I am the cause of unhappiness. Our Swamiji's statement, you are the problem, you are the solution. I am the problem in the sense that I am the cause of my happiness and I have to become the cause of my happiness. Nobody else can make me happy, nor can anybody make me unhappy. Whenever I am unhappy, it is I who is making myself unhappy. And when I am happy, it is I who makes myself happy. Other people can become instrumental. They can pour butter in the fire, no doubt. They can sprinkle salt on the wound. That they do. So, this burning of the wound. But the salt becomes effective if there is a wound in the first place. Otherwise, they can pour whatever salt they want. Is it not so? The wound is my inner problem. That is the wound. That guilt, that hurt, that inner conflict. Then people pour salt. That world will do. That will oblige us. But if we remove that inner wound by doing what is right and not what is convenient, thus I gain an inner victory over my ragadveshas, attachment. They create all inner conflict. I have conflict with myself. I establish peace with myself. Really, I am constantly fighting with myself. And what I need to do is to be at peace with myself. When I'm at peace with myself, I'm at peace with the world. When I'm not at peace with myself, I cannot be at peace with others also. I can blame others as much as I want. I don't have to blame myself. I'm not suggesting that we should blame ourselves either. We should understand this whole thing. First understand. And then determine the strategy, rananiti. What am I going to do? What is the real means of happiness? Right values and attitudes. What is right? Not what is convenient. Even though what is right may be painful, I should be willing to accept that pain. No pain, no gain. But pain will come anyway. We cannot escape pain in life. If I avoid pain now, it will come later on. For example, they keep telling me, Swamiji, wake up 1 hour early. Get up, do some yoga asanas, pranayama, do something for your health. But you know, that comforter is very comforting. So the alarm rings, all right, I'll do it tomorrow. Tomorrow I have 1 more hour of sleep. And that's how not only one day, years go by. When I'm 50, then once I wake up in the morning, then there is something in my back. So I avoid the pain of waking up early and doing my yogasana and pranayama. It catches up with me when I'm 50 and catches up very badly with me. Don't think we can avoid pain. What is in the prarabdha will come. So better that you invite it in a righteous way. See, if your prarabdha is or destiny is to stay hungry, today is Purnima. Today or Today, tomorrow, whatever. So when you observe fast, then also you are hungry. If remaining hungry is destined for you, then if you don't observe fast, then you fall sick and you can't eat. You follow? It will catch up with us. And I'm not suggesting simply inviting pain. But in living properly, pain will come. Being truthful is painful. Swami, is that what you did? Is that how you, they may not tell me on my face, but they will wonder what sort of a person is this. But I have to accept it. That's what I am. I have to learn to accept my weaknesses, learn to accept my vulnerabilities, and learn to like myself as I am. That I am weak, I am vulnerable, I have shortcomings, I have limitations, is not an offense, it's not a crime. That's how I'm born. What can I do with my nose? They keep on all, they used to tease me with for ears and nose, and then when I was children. What can you do? I could have gone to some plastic, so we didn't have that option, but you could do some. But there's something that you can change, many things you can't change. So this is my brother, what can I do? He's all given. There are many things we can't, I'm born with this parent, these are my siblings, this brother, this is my body, this is my height, weight, this, that. So something you cannot change, you have to gracefully accept them. So God gave me, I have to accept myself. God gave me the serenity to accept gracefully what I cannot change. There are many things in life that we cannot change, that are given to us. Never gracefully accept them and learn to enjoy them. But Swamiji, I can't do this. Still, you can gracefully accept it. And give me courage to change what I can. That is, you know, not that I don't do anything, but there are things I can change. I have to do them. So action is meant to change. And right action always requires courage in terms of overcoming my inner pressure of attachments and aversions to do something convenient, to take shortcuts. That pressure is always there within me. I have to overcome that pressure to do what is right. That's called courage. And the outcome comes, I can't change it, except gracefully. So graceful acceptance of what I cannot change, without complaining, without feeling miserable, without blaming anybody. What's called graceful acceptance? When I do not blame anybody. I did something, this is the result. Oh, he's this fellow is responsible. Outcome has come. So what is graceful acceptance? No blaming others, no blaming myself. This is what has happened. Can I learn something from this? Can I do it differently next time? Can I improve upon that? You do. But what has happened, no point in complaining and blaming and feeling miserable. That's called graceful acceptance. When I can maintain an equanimous state of my mind, that's a graceful acceptance. So, action, result. What's the result? Happiness. And grace, what is grace? Graceful acceptance. Of what I cannot change. That is what establishes peace in my mind. Because not accepting realities of life is a big conflict. What is graceful acceptance? Accepting realities of life. When you perform an action, there is an outcome called success or failure. Graceful acceptance. So in success I accept gracefully. Failure I cannot accept. The success, how do I accept gracefully? I'm happy. No, that's not graceful acceptance. Because then I take credit for success. Don't take. Be humble. Thank God you give success. Then I thank God. Failure. There must be a reason there also. Who gives outcome? Ishvara gives outcome. I perform an action, he gives the result. That's our partnership. A constant partnership between individual and God or Ishvara. I perform an action, he gives the outcome. But Swamiji, why does he not give me what I want? Somebody says, Swamiji, believe in God because he does what I want. What if he doesn't do? So graceful acceptance is not easy. Only we understand, if you understand that what is given to us is all given by Ishvara in keeping with our action. So what I confront every moment is nothing but the result of some action I perform in the past which is created by God, Ishvara. Then he is always benevolent. Ishvara is benevolent. He is my well-wisher. This is my faith. Because it says in Gita, Surdam Sarabhutanam, I am the well-wisher of all. If he's my well-wisher, why does he give me pain, Swamiji? Well, see, the example that I give to explain this is partnership between individual called Jiva and Ishvara. What's a partnership? Imagine ourselves playing singles tennis. I'm in one court, Ishvara is in another court. Who is the other court? My coach. I'm in one court, my coach is in the other court. I make a shot, my coach returns the shot. Where will he return the shot? I'm sending here, and that fellow shoots the ball on the other end of the court and makes me run. When I'm there, at the back, he shoots in the front. In the front, at the back, keeps on running from one end to the other. What sort of fellow is this? Is he punishing me or not? Is he punishing me or not? That coach, when he sends this kind of strokes, is he not punishing me? Is it not right that I'm standing, he should give all the shots where I'm standing so I can return them? Or he should keep on sending shots where I'm not, he keeps making me run from one end to the other, I get exhausted. Sometimes he gives me a shot so I can return to just encourage me. But more often than not, he'll give me shots which will make me run. For what? It is to train me, is it not so? If he is a coach, not a competitor, Ishvara is not a competitor, he is my coach. Who is the coach? The one who wants to train me. So thus, if you look upon Ishvara as our coach, whatever circumstances come every moment are all created by Ishvara. Like a shot he has given me, sometimes pleasant, sometimes painful. Pleasant, thank you God, to encourage me. Painful, thank you God, to help me. That attitude, this is called Shraddha. What is it called? Shraddha, the trust. That's called grace or graceful acceptance. It's very much required in life because things don't happen the way I want them. Things do not happen that are convenient. Painful things happen. But if I have trust that even painful result also is given by Ishvara, who is my coach, my well-wisher, whose only agenda is to train me. Because without that I can't be happy if you to grow. Human life is meant for, in the words of Swamiji, learning and growing. What is life? Living life is called life. What is living? Learning and growing is called living. Not breathing and eating and drinking, etc., but learning and growing. With the right attitudes, I always learn and grow. When I perform an action, what's the right attitude? Right values and attitudes. When I receive the outcome, what's the right attitude? It is grace of Ishvara. Then I learn and grow. There may be pain, but that's a pain which is meant for my gain. That's all a matter of Shraddha or trust in Ishvara. So this is our action. What outcome we are seeking? A pleased self. What's the outcome? That's all we want. This worldly outcome, it comes, thank God. Doesn't come, thank God. Because they are incidental anyway. Whether $1 million or $10 million is incidental, because all I can eat is only this much. What I need is this much. And the interesting thing and beautiful thing is that more and more comfort I discover from myself, less and less become my needs. Many of my needs are because I am not happy with myself inside. And so I need so many things to make me happy. As I discover this happiness from within me, my needs, because most needs are emotional. Most needs are emotional. See, food is my need. But pizza and this and all kinds of fancy food is emotional stuff. Clothes are my need, but brand name is an emotional need. Is it not so? So, there is always provision for my basic needs. This emotional need is called samsara, is what I have created, and that can. So, those emotional needs slowly start getting away. My needs become less and less. What is becomes more and more enjoyable. In words of Swamiji, what is called progress today, samsara, is converting luxuries into necessities. That's what we do today. What is luxury today? Become necessity. 20 years cell phone was a luxury, now necessity. Air conditioner luxury, necessity. Everything is, what is necessity? I cannot do without. It's called bondage. Necessity is the mark of bondage. Luxury is mark of freedom. So what I am doing in my life? Converting freedom into bondage. What process is this? Converting bondage into freedom. Meaning, converting necessity into luxuries. When you don't need something, it becomes a luxury. As the needs go down, as you discover inner satisfaction, your needs automatically reduce. Then what is this luxury? Converting necessities into luxuries. That's the process. That's the outcome. That's the result. Karma, action, result, and grace. So this is how they are connected. Oh. We have a few minutes. If we have, then a few minutes for... We have to close at 9 o'clock, isn't it? Yeah. So a few minutes for any questions. We have a quick question. Question? Okay. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah Hari Om.